was only 7 years ago that I first answered the call of mountaineering and almost hung up on it. Napping on the crater rim of Mount St. Helens in South Washington on July 29th, 2017, I was mentally beat up and teetering on defeat. I was enamored but intimidated. The three other people I climbed with that day were far ahead of me in fitness and barely winded. Looking back, I now know that that climb demands a higher level of endurance mentally and physically than I had taken the time to establish. The difficulty of that hike, 8.5 miles round trip with 4,600 feet in gain, 1,000 of that being through Ashfield, that's 1 foot forward, 2 slides back, manifested into self-doubt. Did I even belong in the mountains? Since that day, I've been on the pursuit of understanding what it takes is, and to prove to myself that I have what is required to pursue larger peaks. I have trained and tested my body and mental fortitude. I've failed and succeeded. The call of the mountains has become louder since that sunny day in July 7 years ago. My answer oscillates between a resounding, I am on my way, to I just don't know if mountaineering is for me. I wish I could tell you that self-doubt politely exits the room, never to return, once you begin the work of belonging in a difficult sport. It does not, but that, my friends, is why the importance of mental toughness permeates the teachings of established mountaineers. You are training your body when you suffer up a local 4,000-foot peak with a 30-plus-pound pack, but more importantly, you are teaching your brain how to suffer. Suffering well is the introduction to your personal mountain autobiography. Suffering can be sexy, so hear me out. Imagine you are struggling on your most difficult training hike to date. It is a training hike. You don't have a rope team relying on your participation, and you can turn around whenever you want. But you don't turn around. You tap into quotes that inspire you. You admire the sun through the trees and bask in its fleeting warmth in spots along the trail. You become present. You notice what your body is feeling, and you tell it that it can and will keep going. You tell your mind that, no, I am not dying, you trickster, and this is making me stronger. You reach the top. You've accomplished something most people do not even try. You are building resilience in sport and in life because, yes, pushing your mind in the mountains will absolutely benefit the other categories of your life. Like me, you may not even have a solid athletic background. Like me, you may be quietly wondering if your lack of athletic background, besides middle school volleyball and cheerleading, notable, will hold you back. Who are we to become athletes as adults? Do we even have a seat at that table? I hope to help you realize that you do have what it takes to begin mountaineering and chase taller and taller peaks. That you are not alone when you think you do not have what it takes to push yourself in the mountains and reap the life-changing benefits they bestow. Here is what I have learned, presented in a humble package. I am still learning, and I am not perfect. My most recent climbs in Ecuador showed me I still have a lot of work to do in my work as a mountain athlete. My mountaineering journey paused for about a year after Mount St. Helens. The same friend who encouraged me to hike Helens was visiting again, this time to attempt Mount Adams, a volcano almost directly south of Mount Rainier in Washington. We were planning on 2 nights in the wilderness, 1 night camped at the trailhead, 1 night camped at lunch counter below Piker's Peak on the mountain, and 1 very long day with a summit push and hike all the way back to the car. I was green to alpine starts, where you begin a summit push around midnight because that is when the mountain is frozen and safest, and was very green to nutrition when exerting your body, especially at altitude. I tried Mountain House meals for the first time while at the trailhead and lunch counter and had a very uncomfortable and very gross digestive reaction. Mount Adams is a pack it out rather than a bury it mountain, I was forced into a closeness with my friends that I never thought I would have to experience. Lesson one. Don't try food, especially dehydrated meals, for the first time while on trail. Test it out when you're in the comfort of your own home with a bathroom in close proximity. I rented plastic mountaineering boots as well, and I will never again do that with particular blister-prone feet. Because of how uncomfortable I was, I post-holed all the way up because I didn't bring snowshoes, I had severe stomach issues, and my feet were blasted. I did not summit. I did not attempt the climb past lunch counter. Lessons learned. Always test out what you're planning on eating on the mountain. Do not introduce something new while out there, breaking your boots. And not to bash on the plastic mountaineering boots. They're just not for me. And highly recommend renting if you can't find rentable leather mountaineering boots. Or find used ones. The price point is quite high on a lot of mountaineering boots. If you can buy new and break them in beforehand, even better. Prepare for the climate and the weather. Bring warmth and waterproof and proper footing. All noted, Courtney. I cried a lot on Mount Adams, and I just about swore off the mountains. My boyfriend at the time was very supportive on that climb and stayed with me at lunch counter. We chatted about it in a way that helped me realize that I just had a lot to learn. So I put an asterisk next to Adams on my mountain list. I would be back, and I would be better prepared. I still have not gone back to Mount Adams to climb it. I ran around it for my ultramarathon last summer, but I think that this summer might be the one to go and try to tackle that peak again. So after Adams, I set my sights on the remaining three volcanoes that I had not attempted yet in Washington to kickstart my mountain athlete career. An interjection on that, I never considered myself a mountain athlete for years. I considered myself an enthusiast and believed athlete was reserved for those people who have expertise and success in the mountains. It wasn't until I hired a coach from Mount Fuji that I was called an athlete. It took a bit to fully adopt the title. To be transparent, though, if you are pursuing mountain sports by doing mountain sports, you too, my friend, are an athlete. While I kept my goals of Baker and Rainier on the horizon, they were not fully realized for years. Intimidation, fear, and financial accessibility kept me to the local hikes of the Cascade Mountain Range in Washington and some peaks of Montana. In October of 2020, I went back up Helens. We got the last day of permits. I believe it was October 20th at that time. Also quite snowy on the summer trail at that time of year. Helens became and remains a yearly pilgrimage for me. In 2020, I was riding the coattails of confidence in other parts of my life. The year prior, I had finished my bachelor's degree in literature after over a decade of pursuit. I traveled to Europe for the first time and pushed myself out of my comfort zone with international hookups and adventure. I was building muscles of confidence and independence. I wanted to experience more of the magic of the mountains to accompany this life I was building for myself. I continued to hike a lot, harder and harder mountains around me. There is a local hike in North Bend of Twin Peaks fame, the hike called Mailbox Peak. Legend says it is second only to Mount Rainier, 4,000 feet of gain in about 3.6 miles, an absolute ass kicker. I never attempted it until 2022. I cried on the way up and realized again, I've got some work to do. Mount Baker was scheduled for July of that year, 2022, and I hit my nose to the grind to train. It was at this time that I started training for the gain. I look up elevation gain over mileage for a big climb and replicate that with local hikes. I took the Easton Glacier route up Baker with a guide through Northwest Alpine Guides. These details were booked into my ongoing list of lessons. Training for the elevation gain and mileage with a weighted pack is an incredible way to train mentally and physically. It is these training hikes I tap into and reminisce about when I'm struggling on a big climb. I've done this before. And guides are worth their weight in gold. They know the route, have the experience, and you bring the fitness. This was my first officially guided climb, and I went with an all-women group. It was inspiring and really hard. I recall a pain in my heel that would historically send me into a bit of a spiral. What is this pain? Will it get worse? Should I turn around? This is also when I clocked my tendency to be very adverse to discomfort. I summited and was so proud of myself. I overcame mental doubt, and I was beginning to understand the fitness I needed. Physical, 4 to 5 days a week of weight training, and zone 2 cardio in there, plus weekend hard hikes. And mental. I had to dial in and figure out how to make that work. But it was all starting to click. Of course, shortly after that accomplishment, I was rocked by yet another lesson. 2 weeks after my successful Baker Summit, I took to Rainier with a planned trek up to Mir and along the Disappointment Cleaver route to the summit. I chose to go with RMI, and one of my best girlfriends joined the climb as well. We chatted with the guides about our speed concerns. RMI has a reputation for moving fast and keeping a very tight schedule. If you can't hang, you turn around. On a beautiful day in July, we hiked up to Camp Mir. I was struggling. My asthma was triggered all the way up, and I just couldn't keep pace. I made it to Mir, though, but I told my guide I was feeling very nervous about my ability to summit the next morning. She insisted I try. Another lesson jotted down. Be honest about how you are feeling and what you feel you are capable of with guides and the people on your team. Guides climb with hundreds of people and can tell if someone may really struggle on the summit push, and they will be honest with you about how they perceive your abilities. She thought I could do it, so I did too. That night, Dave Hahn sauntered into the RMI shack on Mir at 11 p.m. with a 5-gallon Cambro of coffee to wake us up for our summit push. 1 hour later, I roped up and stepped onto the first glacier of the climb. I was an absolute ball of nerves. My breathing was off all night. And at the first designated turnaround point, the Ingram Flats, I sat down and sobbed. My breathing wasn't catching up, and I was terrified of having an asthma attack higher on the mountain. 11,100 feet was my new high point, and I took that as the only win of the climb. I turned around and went back down. When in reality, I learned incredible lessons in that 24 hours. I started a new breathing treatment medication after that, which has honestly changed my life. My lungs feel quote-unquote normal for the first time since I can remember, or what I perceive normal to be. I realized that my anxiety was contributing to my breathing troubles, so I dove into a little bit about why I was having anxiety on that climb. I was scared I was going to be too slow. I was scared of walking through known rockfall areas and needing to rush. I was scared of putting the climb in jeopardy for other people if I was too high on the mountain and something really went wrong. I was scared, and I needed to develop my mental resilience further if I wanted bigger peaks. With another asterisk, this time next to Rainier, I started to dream of international climbs. I was planning a trip to Japan with my boyfriend and a couple friends. I researched climbing permits and the climbing season for Mount Fuji and convinced my group that we should go in early September so I could catch the last couple of weeks of the climbing season for Fuji. Fuji, to me, was the beginning of becoming a serious mountaineer. I wanted to dive deep into my fears and limitations and explode them like a climbing backpack. I needed to get honest with myself and sort through it all, ugly included. I had hired a coach before when I was training for Rainier. That coach's training was valuable, but they were international and relatively hands-off, as well as not as interested in mountaineering themselves. I needed a new approach, so I hired a coach local to Seattle with an impressive mountaineering resume. Lisa Thompson has climbed the Seven Summits and was the second American woman on top of K2. And she lives in Seattle. She was actually on the podcast a couple of episodes back. If you're qualified to climb mountains, go check it out. Awesome, awesome woman and awesome conversation. She developed a plan for Fuji with me. As a result, that climb was the highlight of my mountaineering career thus far. Per my lessons before, I brought snacks I knew I liked and would sit well. I brought my own trekking boots that were nicely broken in. I packed rain gear and I packed sun gear. We took the Tsubashiri Trail, and it's a bit harder than the more famous Yoshida Trail. Tsubashiri packs in 4,600 feet of gain in the first day. I trained for that gain on my training hikes, and then the subsequent, I believe, about 1,000 more feet to the summit from the hut the next morning, and determined the weight of my pack, which was light. If you can stay in huts and not carry a tent and cooking gear, do it for your first couple of climbs. It will also encourage you to get back out there, because the lighter the weight, you'll have a little bit more fun the first couple of times you're out there. And the mental relief of knowing I have done that elevation before in my practice climbs is unmatched. I think that was a big part of that climb. That's kind of when it started to click, that I was able to look back on the exact training days and the hikes that I did that were the replication of the gain that I was doing, and it gave me so much confidence. I woke up at 2 a.m. the morning of the summit, excited about experiencing the sunrise at the top of Japan. This was my second guided climb where I did not know anyone else in the group, and I learned that I really love that dynamic just as much as going with people I do know. The mental game is a bit different, but the independence encourages harder days. Fuji taught me I can do hard things, and I can do them well. Fuji also taught me you can do hard things, and you can do them well. Offshoot of a little story, there were about 30 other people in the group climbing Fuji with me. A lot of people. There are no glaciers on Fuji, so at least not on the side that we are on. Pretty sure there's none on the whole volcano. But we didn't have to rope up. It was a hike up with no ropes, no mountaineering boots, trekking boots only. So it was manageable with 30 people. And we had quite a few guides. There was this one woman and her boyfriend on the climb. And I had made a point on the van ride over from Tokyo to get to know some people, their experience before, if they hike, what they were excited about on the climb, you know, just getting to know them. And this particular woman had not hiked much at all before. And she was very excited, though, and very eager to get going and experience Fuji. We get started on the climb and she falls back pretty much immediately. And we catch wind that she had turned around and gone back to the first hut. In my experience with myself, if I want to turn around and go back to where I started, I would be hard-pressed to turn around and go back up that mountain. I would be mentally defeated. So, absolutely no judgment for this woman for turning around. Sometimes you just don't have a good day in the mountains, and it's okay to turn around. I honestly didn't expect to see her again until I got back down. We finish our first day, and we get to the hut that we are staying at for the night, which I believe was the 8th station or the 9th station, one of the two. Sitting there having dinner in the hut, and who walks in the door but that woman that turned around? Turns out she went to collect herself a little bit. She turned back around, faced straight up the mountain, and continued on her climb. And she made it to the hut. Over 4,000 feet over a few hours. I was just floored and so, so damn proud of her. She looked like a ghost, a little worse for wear, ate some food, went up to her bunk. I went up to her bunk after her, and I told her one of the marks of a great mountain athlete is to suffer well. And my babe, you suffer well. You gathered your mentals, you figured it out, and you continued up the climb, and you probably wanted to yeet yourself off a couple times, but you just kept going and you made it to the hut. Girl, she was amazing. And it brings me back to, if she can do that after having a really rough day, a really rough first go, you too can do very hard things. We can do hard things and we can do them well. But after Fuji, I was officially hooked. After 6 years of thinking I was hooked on mountaineering, I knew it in my bones after that climb. I would pursue this for as long as my body and the mountains allowed me to. I learned and applied. I understood that mental toughness will continue to develop as long as I keep pushing, and that toughness will ebb and flow. Some climbs will require me to dig very, very deep, and other climbs it will feel like the most natural thing in the world. I had to accept this fully. When I was sitting at the bottom of Fuji, beer in hand and savoring the local mushroom ramen, the best I've ever had, I texted my coach. She was planning a trip to Ecuador in early 2024 to climb a couple peaks there. I was in. Cayambe was the main objective. Sitting proud as the tallest point on the equator at 18,996 feet above sea level, Cayambe is home to hundreds of crevasses within deep, ever-moving glaciers. It was my toughest mental test to date. We went out for a training acclimatization hike the morning of February 19th. The route we took was probably less than a quarter of what we were going to do later that night. I felt good. We had been in Ecuador for about a week and a half at that point and acclimated by hiking Rumanawi and to the huts on Cotopaxi and Illaniza. We were going to go up Illaniza Norte, but the weather had different ideas for us, so we turned our little tushies back and walked back down the mountain, but used it as an acclimatization sleep in the hut, which was great. I was feeling healthy and really great, actually, at the elevation, so we were between 9,000 feet and 16,000 feet throughout the trip. I brought snacks I knew would work, ate food at the hut I knew would settle well again. I brought my own boots that I broke in a bit and layered on alpine armor tape, probably a little thicker than intended, for the parts of my feet I knew would be feeling the still new boots. I step on the glacier with my crampons around 11 p.m. on the 19th, and not even half an hour in, my right crampon breaks. I hail the guide, she fixes it by tightening the straps, and we carry on. On that same glacier, not even 15 minutes later, my right crampon breaks again. The guide radioed for the other guide to come back and help. So I had a guide on my rope, Meche, and then it was me and then my coach Lisa behind me. There was one more rope team made up of our other guide, who was our guide for the whole trip, Lucy, and then my friend Jess was on her rope team. So Meche radioed for Lucy to come over on their Rocky Talkies, and Lucy comes over. But if we couldn't fix the crampon, my climb was over. Lesson noted, these crampons were old and they were finicky on Baker, so I should have invested in new ones before such a long glacier day. My coach Lisa mentioned that she had duct tape and we could try to salvage the crampon by taping it. Lucy, being the genius she is, the guide, taped the metal strip portion in place in two different key spots on the bottom of the crampon. Though, while my crampon was being assessed and altered and they were saving my climb, I was feeling sorry for myself and my mentals were beginning to tank. I asked the guides 3 different times to turn me around. If my crampon broke again higher up, I didn't want to jeopardize the climb for my rope teammate, Lisa. I was scared and cold, and at that point, I did not want to be on that glacier. Here again, I relied on others to help get me through the tough patch. My rope guide, Meche, told me to test the duct tape crampon on the next glacier, and if it broke again, that was it. I would turn around. But just try. So I turned to Lucy, still grasping for my out, the wonderful woman who was our lead guide, and I told her I was done. She looked me dead in the eyes and she said, "No." Can't argue with that. So in silence, I battled myself. I was uncomfortable, but everybody on those rope teams believed in me more than I believed in myself. I swallowed my pride, told myself to buck up and get over it and keep going. I said, okay, and we carried on. My crampon held. Hello, duct tape. And while focusing on the more stars than I have ever seen filled sky, my mental strength was starting to build back. I faced my fears again on a traverse with a literal snowslide into an enormous crevasse and a partially blown out snow bridge. I reached the summit and I sobbed. I really, really did not think I would make it to the top the moment I stepped on that first glacier. But here is the funny thing about accomplishment. I made it, but I beat myself up when I got back down about my lack of mental toughness. I told myself that I shouldn't have tried to throw in the towel because one thing went wrong. And if I was using something going wrong as an excuse to end the climb, I had some serious work to do. Another lesson learned, there are solutions for many things that go wrong. And the solution does not have to always be turnaround. Also, if you don't yet have duct tape in your kit, I highly suggest you get some. You can get one without the cardboard roll in the middle and it saves a lot of space in your pack. After a week of being home now, so present time, I have now processed my guilt on Kayambe a bit more. I'm starting to learn about myself that when I'm in wild spaces, I crave creature comforts. And when I'm in my creature comforts, I crave wild spaces. We are fortunate to enjoy the wild places that we have left. How lucky we are to stand on remote glaciers in some of the most beautiful places on Earth, unbothered by the hustle and bustle of modern life. A wilderness that demands us to be present and calm. Mental strength can come from within, and it can be fueled by those around you who see the light inside of you. It is okay to believe them when they say you have more to give than you think that you do. Chances are, they are right. I gained so much on Kayambe. And true to the mountain amnesia so many of us face, I am looking forward to my next climb later this summer. I'm heading back to remove that asterisk on Mount Rainier by way of everything I have learned about myself and my strength in the mountains within the last 2 years. I am only scratching the surface on my grit, strength, and persistence as a mountain athlete. I would wager that you too are capable of far more than you ever thought you were. Let's go to the mountains. Thank you so much for listening to the You're Not Qualified podcast, you capable babes. I'm very excited that you made it to the end of this episode. I would love to hear from you. If you feel inspired by the stories that you hear on this podcast, if you feel inspired by this particular one, please drop me a line. I can be reached by email, ynqpod@gmail.com. I am most active on Instagram. The handle is @ynqpod. Please drop me a DM there. I love chatting with you all. Write a comment, anything you'd like. I just want to hear what you think. If you think that you'd be a great fit for this podcast and you want to come on and tell your story of how you overcame imposter syndrome, please get in touch. Or if you know of somebody that you think would also love to tell their story, get them in touch with me. Would love to hear from them. If you like what you hear, I love it when you subscribe. So please do so or follow me, depending on what platform you're listening on. And also leave a review. Spotify does this really fun thing now where you can actually leave a review after a prompt. It's a really exciting way to get engaged. I realized it not too long ago when scrolling through Spotify that they let you put prompts as the creator. And I would love to hear from you. So please just get in touch. Let's get involved. I am so excited that you are even listening, and I really, really, really hope that this inspires you to get out and do that damn thing. Go do everything that scares you. You are way more capable than you think you are. I promise you. Again, friends, thank you so much for listening. Go do that thing. I will see you very soon. Bye.